There we go. Hey, good morning again. So good to have you here with us this morning. We are in the final week of a series that you read there called Detox. And we thought that it was important. I really thought that it was important to begin this new year this way at Midcurrent with a detox. In the very first week of this series, I told you that the definition of a detox was the process or period of time in which one abstains from or rids the body of toxic or unhealthy substances. It's a detox. And right, we often go undergo this process for the sake of our physical health at the beginning of a new year, right? We undergo some kind of detox, but I wanted us to undergo the same kind of process for the sake of our spiritual health as well, for the sake of our heads and our hearts and our souls. I wanted us to undergo this same kind of process as well. So what we've done is we've taken the last 5 weeks, and now 6 weeks if we include today, we've taken these weeks to rid ourselves of the toxic things that are holding us back from what I really believe that God has in store for us. I said this in week one, and I'll say it again here this morning as well. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you've been or what you've done. I don't care how many Bible verses that you know or whether or not you'd recognize one if you saw one. I don't care how many times you've been to church or if you haven't been to church at all. I am 100% confident that when we even slightly open ourselves up toward God, when the posture of our heart is open toward God and when we are turning to Him, I really do believe for each and every one of us here that He has a great future in store for us, that He has great things planned for us, and that perhaps, just maybe, this detox for our heart and our soul and our mind would help us to experience more of it, more of what God has in store for us. That's what this series is. Has been all about. And I want to talk today about the final piece of this this detox, right? And what I want to talk about today is actually one of the reasons why I don't like telling people that I'm a pastor, right? The final piece to this series, Detox, it's actually the very same thing. It's the very same reason that I don't like to tell people oftentimes that I'm a pastor. And we're going to get there in just a second, but first let me remind you just very quickly of where we've been so far in this series. In week one, we said that we needed to get rid of negative thinking or the toxic thoughts that we think, because so often the life that we are living is a reflection of the thoughts that we are thinking, right? So the thoughts that we think matter. Week two, we said we need to get rid of what's hidden. It's actually hidden sin, we said. We need to get rid of what's hidden in us because what's kept in the dark limits what's possible in the light, right? And so we said, hey, we got to take a step out of the dark. We got to take a step out of hiding. We got to take a step out of secrecy and into the light so that God can do the things in us that He wants to do. Week three, we said we need to get rid of even just the smallest, roots that are growing inside of us, the smallest roots of bitterness. Why? Because the fruit that we experience in our lives, and so many of us, right, we want to experience good things. We want to experience good fruit in our lives, good things happening and growing in us. We learned that the fruit that grows in our lives depends on the roots that are growing in our hearts. And right, so if it's bitterness that is growing inside of us, even if the smallest roots of bitterness are starting to set in, right, then a bitter life is very possible, very sure, in fact, to follow, right? A bitter life, a bitter attitude, bitter friendships, bitter relationships, a bitter attitude and outlook on life. So we got to get rid of this bitterness inside of us. We talked in week four about needing to get rid of and overcome fear. I think this is huge for so many of us. It was for me. And I had a chance to share about that. But we need to overcome and to get rid of fear. Why? Because God did not give us a spirit of fear. God did not give us a spirit of timidity, right? Fear that exists in us was not a part of God's original design for us. And so I challenged us to face our greatest fear so that we might reach our greatest potential. And I think the results can be pretty incredible. Last week, we talked about needing to get rid of our dependence on material things, right? That's what last week was about. And I, in no way do I mean, or did I mean then, that we as people who are pursuing what God wants for us, that we can't have things. I wasn't saying that, if we're trying to follow Jesus, we can't have nice things. That's not what I was trying to say. I just believe that we need to get rid of our dependence on and our devotion to these things. We need to work hard to expose and to overcome the lies and the false promises that materialism and money and marketing make. Right? Money and material things, they're not bad in and of themselves. They're not like evil things, but here's the truth about them. They are making promises to us. Promises of happiness, promises of security, promises of significance, promises of meaning. They're making promises to us that they just cannot keep. Right? That they might be able to keep that promise for a while or for a moment, but in the long run, they're making promises to us that they just cannot keep. And so when we buy into those promises, when we buy into those lies, oftentimes we end up in some pretty tragic, some pretty toxic situations in our life, all because of decisions, truthfully, that we have made for ourselves. We got to get rid of our dependence on material things. And that brings us to today. There's one more thing that I think that we need to steer clear of. One more thing that I think we need to stay far away from. One more thing that we need to throw out completely. Whenever we come in contact with it, whenever we experience it, whenever we see it in any shape or any form. It has the appearance of being something good. It has the appearance of being something that's meant for our own good, that's meant to get us on the right track, but it is single-handedly one of the most toxic things. It is single-handedly one of the biggest things that holds us back or that keeps us or keeps others from experiencing what God really, really wants for us. Here it is. It's toxic religion. I think it single-handedly, literally has the ability to be one of the main barriers that holds us back or that keeps us from experiencing what God wants for us, toxic religion. Now, I don't know what you think when you hear me say that, toxic religion. Maybe you're going like, whoa, did he just say that? Right? Can a pastor really say that about religion? Did he just break some kind of like pastor rule? Can religion really be toxic? I mean, is it appropriate even to say that? Is that even possible for that to be the case? The unfortunate truth, if I'm just being honest, the unfortunate truth is that it is absolutely possible for religion to be toxic. Too many of you know it to be true. Too many of you have experienced its ugliness, right? Maybe you have actually experienced its ugliness in your life. Maybe you've had a bad experience with religion that's gone bad. And if so, then you know it stings. You know that it leaves a nasty wake. You know that oftentimes it leaves people hurt, leaves people confused, it leaves people turned off to this thing that we call the religion. Oftentimes at its worst, it leaves people kind of turned off to God. They're going, no thanks. Right? It's why so many people, I think, keep religion today at an arm's length. Right? I think it's why so many people today identify themselves as spiritual but not religious. Right? Religion just isn't necessarily a very popular thing today because it can be so toxic. And that's why, if I'm being honest, that's why I get a little nervous sometimes. This is where I started. That's why I get a little nervous sometimes to tell people what I do, right? Because it can be kind of like a conversation ender, like, okay. You know, when I'm like sitting on an airplane with people especially, I'm just sitting there like praying, like, please, please, please don't ask me what I do. Please do not ask me what I do. And it's not because I'm ashamed of being a pastor. It's actually quite the opposite. I'm actually quite determined to be the kind of pastor that I think I am. I'm actually quite determined to be the kind of pastor that I think God has called me to be. So I'm not ashamed in any way of being a pastor. I'm not ashamed to be a passionate follower of Jesus. But when I'm like stuck in a middle seat of a 3-hour flight with nowhere to go, I'm just sitting there hoping nobody asks. It's like, hey, you know what? This would just be a lot easier. You're stuck here. I'm stuck here. There's nowhere to go. This will just be a lot easier. You'll be more comfortable. I'll be more comfortable if we just don't talk about what I do for a living. Right? Because as soon as the conversation takes even the slightest, beyond airplanes, as soon as the conversation takes even the slightest religious turn, people shut down. Walls go up. Right? And things get awkward. Things get awkward real fast. So sometimes I wish that I didn't have to be associated with whatever toxic religion others have experienced before. Maybe you've experienced it before. Maybe you know someone who's experienced it before, because the unfortunate truth is that it does exist in far too many places, and it's existed for far too long, for a long time now. And its presence, whenever it shows up, whenever it rears its ugly head, its presence, it can spoil a good church. It can absolutely just kind of corrupt a good family. And it can corrupt a good community, and tragically, it can spoil the good news about Jesus Christ, and it can hold you and me back from what God has in store for us. It's real. It's a real thing, and it's pretty toxic. In fact, we see one of the earliest examples, right? I've said that it exists in far too many places, and it's existed for far too long. We see one of the earliest examples of this, one of the earliest examples of toxic religion in the New Testament, in the time when churches and followers of Jesus were just coming together for the first time. We see one of the earliest examples in the New Testament in a church that the Apostle Paul, it's a guy named the name of Paul, in a church that he started in Galatia. I've said it here before that Paul in many ways was the first church planter ever. What he did is that he would lead people to Christ, to Jesus in a certain region, and then he'd raise them up as leaders. He developed them, raised them up as leaders, and then empower them to lead and empower them to care for the new, forming Christian community, and then he'd move on to another region. Now, that's not my plan to, like, raise this place up and then take off. I plan on being around for a while and digging in and making Mid-Current the most influential place that it can be. But this is how Paul went about his thing. Lead people to Christ, raise up leaders to lead and empower the church, and then take off. And this is exactly what played out in this new church in this little city called Galatia. Paul raised up the church, and he raised up the leaders, and then he moved on to another region. And all of a sudden, he starts to get wind about what's happening after he left. And it's not good. And soon, he becomes devastated to discover what started actually to take place after he left. Here's what happened. After he moved on, there's a group of people that came in behind him, that came in after him and started to preach something different than what he was preaching. And Paul wasn't having any of it. And so he writes a scathing letter to his peeps back in the church in Galatia. And we're going to look this morning at just a piece of it as he begins writing in Galatians chapter 1. This is verses 6 and 7. Paul writes to his people in Galatia. He says, "I am astonished." Some translations say, "I am shocked." Right? He can't believe what's happening. He says, "I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you to live in the grace of Christ, and you're turning to a different gospel, which is really no gospel at all." The word gospel here, essentially, it just stands for good news. I mean, that's what the Greek word gospel was, good news, right? This was the good news of Jesus Christ and what he has done for the sake of humanity. So Paul's saying, hey, you're actually turning to a different set of good news, which actually really isn't any bit of good news at all. And then he says this, "Evidently, some people are throwing you into confusion and trying to pervert the gospel." They're trying to pervert the good news of Christ. The word pervert here, it actually means turned around. It's a Greek word, metastrepho, means turned around. Some translations say twisted, like, hey, you've really got this kind of messed up. Right, I've heard other people describe it as poisonous, right? Polluted, right? But to me, perverted really is a really great term to describe the seriousness of what's going on. And that's the word that Paul writes here, because their message, it really was polluting, it was tainting, and it was poisoning, and it was spoiling the good news about Jesus. It was toxic. The question is, and at least the question that I hope that you are sitting here asking yourself, the question is, what were they teaching? I mean, what were these people that came in after Paul, what were they teaching? What did they say? What did they say that was so perverted, that was so twisted, that was so poisonous and so toxic? What was it? Don't you want to know? What were they saying? What was so toxic that prompts Paul to write this scathing letter? What was it? The truth is, it wasn't, some egregious sin that they were teaching. That they weren't, promoting like violence or genocide or war. They weren't, encouraging gross, sexual immorality or sexual perversion. They weren't advocating in any way for lust or greed or adultery or lying. They weren't saying, hey, it's okay to just go, lie and steal and murder. They weren't even denying the good news of Jesus. They weren't denying this gospel of Jesus. Their message was far more subtle. It was far more innocent looking, but still so incredibly toxic. And so if I had to summarize their message, if I had to summarize what it is that they came in behind Paul, what it is that they started teaching, if I had to summarize what Paul is saying is so perverted, so twisted, and so toxic, all I would really need to describe their message, all I would really need to summarize their message is two words. Here they are. Jesus and. That was essentially the message that Paul is saying is so toxic. Jesus and. See, this group that came in after Paul, they were known as Judaizers. Okay, essentially they were people who believed in Jesus. They had become followers of Jesus, but they were originally of Jewish traditions, and so they still held quite fast and quite firm to Jewish laws, and there were many of them, right? And so they came into Galatia after Paul, and they started to add their own rules. They started to add their own stipulations to the good news of Jesus. Basically, what they were saying was, hey, what Paul taught you about Jesus was a really good start, but we'll take it from here. Okay, everything he said was great about Jesus. We're in agreement there. Hey, we know and follow Jesus too. But if you really want to be right with God, I mean, if you really want to be, on the right track, if you really want to be on the straight and narrow, if you really want to have, God's favor in your life, then you need to follow Jesus and be circumcised. Okay, for whatever reason, this was one of the primary markers that in that day and in that time and in the Jewish tradition. This was one of the markers that meant you were in good standing with God. They're saying, hey, you got to follow Jesus and be circumcised. Aren't you glad that we don't have a similar procedure as like a prerequisite for attendance here at Midcurrent? I mean, I'm thinking like it's already hard enough to get guys to walk in the door of a church. Anyway, you're like, hey, come on in, guys. We don't bite. Like, I promise you can come in, let alone adding something like this to the whole deal, okay? Essentially, what these guys are saying is, yeah, Jesus is the way, and you still need to follow all these Jewish laws. Jesus and all this other stuff. In essence, if you boil it all down, this is really what religion, toxic religion, it's all about. Jesus and. It's Jesus, doing all of the right things. It's Jesus and checking all of the right boxes. And Paul won't have any of it. In fact, later in Galatians in chapter 3, he continues on to blast his own people. He says, you foolish Galatians. He's saying, who bewitched you? Who tricked you? He's saying, who pulled the wool over your eyes? He says, before your very eyes, Jesus Christ was clearly portrayed as crucified. He's going, I'm the one that told you about this. I know that you heard very clearly the good news of Jesus. And then I like this. He's getting kind of like, sarcastic here. He says, I would like to learn just one thing from you. He turns it on them. He's going, I would like to learn just one thing from you. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law, that is, by all the things that you do? Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law or by believing what you heard? He says, are you so foolish? After beginning this whole deal by the means of the Spirit, he says, are you now trying to finish it off by means of the flesh, by all of the good things that you do? And then in verse 5, he says, so I ask you again, does God give you his Spirit and work miracles among you by the works of the law or by believing what you heard? And then he references what was said of Abraham so long ago. He says, so also Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Abraham didn't, you know, jump through the right hoops and check the right boxes, and then they said, oh, you know, it's all credited to you as righteousness. No, it said he believed God, and that decision was credited to him as righteousness. This guy, Paul, has zero tolerance for a message that preaches Jesus and as a way to close that gap. Jesus and the law. Jesus and your behavior. Jesus and what it is that you do. And the truth is, we need to get rid of this kind of thinking as well. Because this is exactly what pollutes, this is exactly what poisons, this is exactly what corrupts the message of Jesus, the good news of Jesus, and this is what becomes toxic religion. Jesus and. For them, at this time, it was circumcision. And while circumcision may not be much of an issue today, unfortunately, churches and Christians find plenty of other ways to fill in the blank. They find plenty of other ways to fill in Jesus and. And I'm sure that I list a few here, I'm sure that you'll recognize so many of them. Right, so often today, being right with God, you know, like being on the, you know, God's, you know, nice list, closing the gap, you know, that exists between us and God. So often today in churches or among church people, it all comes down to Jesus and something else. Jesus and your good behavior. Jesus and the spiritual resume that you've been, you know, creating for yourself. The message is, you know, Jesus and make sure you check all of the right spiritual boxes, right? The message is Jesus and make sure that you know your Bible well enough and make sure you read the right translation. It's Jesus and make sure you go to church enough and make sure that you give enough and make sure that you donate to the Red Cross enough and make sure that you volunteer enough and make sure you help enough old ladies across the street, right? And make sure you play by all the rules when you walk in these doors. Make sure that you recite and repeat and sit and stand just when you're supposed to. Make sure that you hang out with the right kind of people and only the right kind of people. Make sure that you live exactly like we do and make sure that you make choices exactly like we do and make sure that you talk like we do and make sure that you raise your kids like we do and make sure that you vote like we do and make sure that you read the Bible like we do. And most of all, this one is so huge, right? We can't miss this one. Make sure you dress like we do when you come to church, right? Because we all know that you know that how we dress is obviously really important to our salvation that's made possible by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. We know, right? That we know that it all hinges, the whole deal. We know that it hinges on the clothes that we wear, right? It's toxic stuff. Jesus and some of the messed up stuff like this. I might have told you the story before. In fact, I think I maybe have, but I want to tell it again, right? One of the most heartbreaking stories of toxic religion. One of the most, you know, toxic stories of Jesus and is a story of a young woman who was turned away from church because of how she looked, because of how she dressed. Okay, there's a big-time covenant pastor at a huge church in Oklahoma who's often written about, often spoken about. I've heard it and read this story many times. He's often spoken and written about this moment of religion at its worst. Years ago, as a young pastor, he was invited to be a guest preacher at a local church. And before the service, he stood as a greeter, often like I do. Love to say hey to people coming in. He stood as a greeter near the front door where he had the ability to see an old beat-up car pull into the parking lot. And a disheveled-looking young woman stepped out and very apprehensively, started to make her way to the front doors of the church. The best he could understand, she looked like she was maybe clearly a first-time visitor to that church. Her clothes looked like she had almost slept in them the night before, and, messy hair was, kind of half-covering part of her face. And this pastor remembers thinking to himself in this moment as she nervously approached the church. This pastor writes that he remembers thinking to himself, God, I think you're going to do something big in this woman's life today. But before he could welcome her to church that morning, an elder from the church, another leader from the church, stepped in to extend a very special welcome of his own. And he said, young lady, we wear our best for God at this church. Is that the best outfit you've got? Woman turned right back around, walked out the door, and drove off for good. Man, it's stories like these, even, thousands of miles away, it's stories like these, it's experiences like these that sometimes make it hard for me to tell people that I'm in the same kind of work. It doesn't get much more toxic and twisted and polluted than this, right? Jesus and some kind of exterior thing. This is the exact opposite of everything that I hope for when it comes to this church. If I'm honest, it's stories like these that make me want to adopt our own official dress code here at Midcurrent Church, which would be this: please do. I'm thinking about it, making our very official dress code at Midcurrent: please do. After that, I don't care. Cover the essentials and come to Christ, right? Please do. After that, I do not care. That is, unless you show up wearing a green and, okay, never mind. I'm not going to go there. We're feeling good this morning, so we won't go there, okay? Folks, we cannot let ourselves become people. We cannot let ourselves become families. We cannot let ourselves become neighbors or coworkers or church leaders. We cannot let ourselves become a church who believes that God's grace for us and grace for others is based on Jesus and some kind of hoop that we jump through, some kind of extra special box that we check. These extra hoops, these extra boxes to check, these extra steps to take are the telltale sign of toxic religion. And they uncover one of the biggest problems with just religion in general, which is this, that religion at its most basic form leads you to focus on the external rather than the internal. It's like, hey, it doesn't really matter what's going on in my heart, right? I mean, as long as I just kind of am going through all the motions out here, it doesn't really matter what's happening here. I got it going on out here, right? Religion requires a behavior-oriented path toward pleasing God. Religion essentially becomes our effort. This is what religion is. Religion is our effort, and we work really hard. And other people tell us we got to work really hard. Religion is our effort to close the gap between sinful humans and a holy God. At its very simplest, religion is based on what we do, how good we are, how many good things we do. Like I said, how many old ladies we help across the street. Do you have a tally, right? Do you have enough check marks? It's about what we do. It's religion. But what I want us to know this morning is that Jesus came to this earth not to start a new religion, right? Jesus did not come to this earth to start a religion. John 10:10, it says that, in fact, Jesus came so that we would have life and that we would have life to the fullest. He came to close the gap for us and, most importantly, to be in a relationship with us, okay? In a relationship with Jesus is based upon not what we do. A relationship with Jesus is not based on what we do, but it's based on, it's founded on what's already been done. Jesus dies on a cross for us to close the gap, for all of us. Close the gap between us and God. For all time. That's the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's not what we do that gains us favor with God. It's our belief in what's already been done. It's a big difference, right? It's a big difference. If I had to sum it up, I'd just sum it up like this. Religion is about what we do. A relationship with Jesus is about what's already been done. Religion is about what we do. Relationship is about what's been done for us. It's a relationship with Jesus. And that's what I want for every single person who walks through these doors. That's what I want each person who walks through these doors to experience. Not a religion that when they come in, you know, they see the look and the traces and the fingerprints of another religion. I want them to walk through these doors and to experience an invitation to a relationship with Jesus. It's my hope. And I should quickly add here that it's not about what we do. It's about what's been done for us. I want people to experience a relationship, not a religion. But that doesn't mean, this is just a little piece aside here, that doesn't mean that there's not good things for us to do, right? It's too easy. We can go, hey, well, if it's already been done for us, then it doesn't really matter what I do then, right? Just go on doing whatever I want. Right? It doesn't mean that there's not good for us to do. It doesn't mean that we don't sacrifice. It doesn't mean we don't give. It doesn't mean we don't go to church. It doesn't mean we don't love our neighbor. It doesn't mean that we don't serve one another. It doesn't mean that we don't have any kind of concern for the good things that there are to do. But we just have to be clear about why we do them. And near the end of this letter that Paul is writing to the church in Galatia, he reminds his people of this very fact. He says this, "For when we place our faith in Christ Jesus, there is no benefit in being circumcised or uncircumcised." Right? He's talking about the law and the things that we do. He's saying there's no benefit in making sure that we check the right boxes or develop the right kind of spiritual resume. He says, what is important is faith expressing itself in love. There's no benefit in all the hoops that we jump through and all the boxes we check, but what is important is faith, what it is that we heard and believed. It's faith expressing itself in love. And so what we need to know is this, that what we do is simply a response to what's already been done. It's not the other way around, right? It's not so that. We don't do all these things and check all the boxes and love our neighbor and serve one another and come to church and give things. It's not so that God would love us. It's because he already does. It's because he already does and he sent his son for us. What we do is simply our response to what has already been done. And faith in his son Jesus, believing what we have heard about him, it is the only thing that we need. It is the only thing that will close the gap between ourselves and a God who loves us and a God who has big, big plans for us. It's Jesus only. It's not Jesus and. And so as I close here, let me just ask you a question that I'd love for you to be thinking about right now, that I'd love for you to be thinking about as your week goes on. What's your biggest and? What and has been forced onto you at some point? I mean, what and do you maybe force onto yourself? What and are you trying to live up to gain God's favor, or to gain God's approval? What extra hoop have you exhausted yourself trying to jump through? What extra requirement has felt impossible for you to ever meet, and yet you keep trying to meet it? What extra step, what extra layer has been the barrier, has been the obstacle between you and God? What's the piece that when you see it, or that when you experience it, what's the piece that makes you say, nah, no thanks. Not if that's what God is all about. No thanks. What is it for you? What's your biggest and that you put on yourself, or that someone else has put on to you? Whatever it is, here's what I want to encourage you to do today. It's very simple. Drop the and. Drop whatever and has been forced onto you. Drop whatever and you've believed is necessary for you. It's toxic. It's polluting. It's poisoning. It's spoiling. It's corrupting the good news of Jesus, and it's preaching a message that really isn't good news at all. Right, that there would be something else that we've got to do in order to make up the difference. That's not good news. That there's something more that we've got to do. That there's something extra that I've got to live up to. That's not good news. That there's something more for me and for you to do. Religion is about what we do. A relationship with Jesus is about what's already been done. And that's what I want. That is my single prayer for every person that walks through the doors of Midcurrent. To experience a relationship, a life-changing, a life-giving relationship with Jesus. And if you've never said yes to that a relationship before, maybe just at all, you never said yes to anything having to do with a God or with a church, or maybe if you're honest, you've kind of said yes to a religion before. However that shakes out for you, if you've never said yes to a relationship with Jesus before, I want to give you that chance today. Because it could be the first step to say yes to a real relationship with Jesus. Not to a religion, but to a relationship. It could be the first step in the life, the incredible life, the new life, the full life that God has planned for you. Could be the very first step in it all. And so if that's you, if you're ready to drop whatever and has burdened you, if you're ready to drop whatever and has confused you or hurt you or held you down before, then here's what I want you to do. I'd love for you to just pray this really simple prayer with me. You can just repeat after me. In fact, we'll all close our eyes here as we close this service. And if this is you, I'd invite you to just pray this prayer with me. God, I'm tired. I'm tired of trying to work hard enough to gain your approval. I'm tired of trying to do enough or know enough or be enough. I'm tired of being told that I'm not enough on my own. And so thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sending your son Jesus. And for the good news, the great news, that what he already did for me is enough. Today I say yes to you. And yes, not to a new religion, but to a relationship with Jesus. And I put my faith in him. And from this day forward, I will follow his lead for my life from here on out. And for all of us here this morning, God, I just ask that you would guide us in this work to get rid of toxic religion or any trace of it. God, even for those of us who have, you know, firmly said yes, even for those of us who have, you know, have a relationship with you and have for a long time, God, it's so easy for things to creep in along the edges. It's so easy for these little ands to kind of work themselves into the equation that make us think, ah, there's something more for me to be doing. So God, would you help us to recognize what it is that's starting to creep in along the edges? Would you help us to see what other kind of message we're starting to buy into? What other kind of good news we're starting to listen to that really isn't good news at all, God? Would you help us to be very clear of that each and every day? God, we thank you for your son, Jesus, for the good news about the life that has been made possible for us because of what you have done and because of what he has done for us. God, we give you thanks for this morning. We pray all these things in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.